Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. All right, so this is the food coma slot. We have intentionally lowered the room temperature by 15 degrees just to make sure that the carbohydrates don't get the best of you. No, actually, they are going to try and make it slightly warmer, but just a little. Today's talk is all new. What is in the app is not correct, so if you'd like a copy of the slides, you can go to the aptly named wherecanigettheslides.com to get the slides. I mean, you don't need to take a picture. It's where can I get the slides? So let's talk about analytics. Specifically, let's talk about the problems we have with analytics. B2B, B2C, marketing, sales, doesn't matter. We have five problems with analytics. These are the five V's: volume, variety, velocity, veracity, value. Come on in, find a seat. The first problem we face is a volume problem. The amount of data that is coming at us is hitting record numbers. Right now, this year, according to Seagate and IDC, we as a civilization will create 30 zettabytes of data. Now, a zettabyte is a really, really difficult number to get your brain around because it sounds like it's made up. It actually isn't made up. If you were to start binge-watching Netflix, in the Eocene era, 55 million years ago, and you didn't stop for anything, you would just about get to one zettabyte of data today. That's how much a single zettabyte is, and we're creating 30 of these a year. What's going to happen in the next 7 years is even more astonishing. All of these lovely devices that we own that have sensors and everything we could possibly put them in are going to create 120 zettabytes a year by 2025. Some of that's going to find our way into marketing data. But even on today's practical scale, how many of you have ever tried to download Facebook's analytics from your Facebook page? Isn't that fun? You got a spreadsheet with 14 tabs, right? This is delightful. It's very, very difficult to use. So volume is our first problem. Our second problem is a variety problem. The amount of types of data we are running into is continuing to grow and expand. In just 60 seconds on the internet, in 2017, we had things like 16 million text messages, 452,000 tweets, 15,000 GIFs in Messenger, 3.5 million search queries. In 2018, 18 million text messages, 266,000 hours on Netflix, 1.1 million swipes on Tinder, I'm guessing mostly left. As marketers, though, we have an even bigger, more pressing problem. How many people love This Landscape by Scott Brinker with 8,000 marketing technology companies on it? The problem isn't the companies. The problem is every single one of these bloody companies has their own analytics, and they don't talk to each other. Our third problem is a velocity problem, the speed at which data is coming at us. If you were born, if you're graduating college this year in 2018, you were born in 97, 98, during which time there were about 4 million news stories in your lifetime. This year, we are on pace to track to about 110, 115 million news stories. That's 200,000 news stories a day. Even if your company did a bang-up job and got on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, you are one of 200,000 stories. There's no way that we can keep up with that much data individually. Our fourth problem is a veracity problem, and I don't mean fake news, but I do mean the ability for us to trust our data. This is a fun example. A few years ago, Google Maps said if you tried to go from Topeka to Tokyo, step 27 would be kayak across the Pacific Ocean, which is a really, really bad idea. You can, but you shouldn't. But more close to home for B2B marketers, how many of you have this person in your marketing automation system? Test, test, with test at testing.com. Right? We all have terrible data littering our systems, and because of the speed at which we're getting the data, we're able to keep up with it less and less. Finally, we have an analytics value problem. We, our CMOs, our boards, our stakeholders, don't really trust our analytics. And as a result, the percentage of time marketing analytics is used in decision making has actually gone down. It hit a peak in February of 42% of organizations, but it's gone down to 35%. And disturbingly, B2B services is the lowest, followed by B2B product. Right? So B2B marketers don't trust and don't use their analytics. Why? Well, it's all these problems. All of our analytics have specific value, but the value changes based on how we use it. When you look at the hierarchy of analytics, the base level descriptive analytics that answers the question, what happened, has very little value by itself, right? There's no value to someone backing up the dump truck and pouring the data all over your desk. Like, that's not a fun thing to have happen. So it's very low value by itself. We start to create more value when we have diagnostic analytics. Why did something happen? Can we answer why you abandoned this form? Can you answer why you didn't call back the salesperson who's called you 15 times today? That's sort of medium value. We get to unlock the value of analytics when we get to things like predictive. What will happen next? How can we predict and forecast and plan? And then we get to prescriptive analytics where our software, our tools, and our teams help us understand what to do. That's very high. And the ideal is proactive analytics when the machines do it for us. And unless you're Jeff Bezos, that's probably not where you are. But here's the challenge. You can't skip steps on this ladder. And almost everyone in this room is stuck here. We can't find the data. We have no idea where it is. We can't make use of it. And as a result, this is how we tend to use analytics. Wrong. So what's the solution to this problem? The solution is partially artificial intelligence and machine learning. And I say partially because it is not the complete solution. AI is not magic. Right? It is not fairy dust, it is not unicorn poop, it is nothing that is going to create something from nothing. What AI promises and what it can deliver on today are three benefits: acceleration, accuracy, and automation. Acceleration means we get the result faster. When you think about 200,000 news stories, how long would it take you to go through those news stories and find mentions of your company? Probably the rest of your life, right? But a machine can do that very, very quickly. The second benefit is accuracy. Can the machine do a better job than we can? Yes, because humans as a whole are terrible at things like accuracy. And third, how many of you have a job or a task or a thing you do in marketing that is pretty much the same thing over and over again? You know, like you have to schedule social media for the week and whatever. And it's just not fun. It's not rewarding. It's not exciting. It's the same copy-paste crap that you've been doing for 20 years, right? Putting data into a spreadsheet. Well, the machines can help us do that stuff really well. So those are the benefits of AI. Let's set some quick definitions. What is this thing? Because everybody and their cousin is talking about it. The analogy that I've heard that I really like that my CEO tells me is profoundly inappropriate is that AI is like teenage sex. Everyone's talking about it, but no one's actually doing it. Artificial intelligence is teaching machines to learn like humans. When you look at how a human being develops, we start with basic, very simple algorithms, how to see, how to hear. We develop language and eventually develop higher cognitive function. By the way, as the parent of a teenager, I appreciate the fact that the cognitive function drops off when they hit 13 on this chart. When we look at machines and how they're evolving, we start with things like statistics and algorithms, evolve to machine learning, get to deep learning, and we'll eventually get to what's called general purpose AI, when a machine becomes sentient and can think for itself. This is a long ways off, just to set expectations. Skynet will not be taking over your marketing tomorrow. All AI begins at stats and probability. AI is math, not magic. Once you have the basic statistics to be able to understand your data, you build algorithms. These are things that you do repeatedly over and over again. Every time you've done A/B testing, you are using an algorithm. You used an algorithm this morning. I guarantee you did, because you probably put the same general article of clothing on first. Some people put it on the bottom first, some people put the top on first, a few people put their socks on first, but it's generally the same. You have an algorithm, a way of doing things. This is where traditional software stops. You make the thing, it does the thing. Machine learning, by virtue of the name, means that we are teaching the machines how to learn. We give them data and they give us software. Instead of we make the software and they give us data, which is traditional software. So for example, suppose you had a table full of colored blocks. You could use machine learning in two different ways to make sense of this. If you knew what you were looking for, you'd be doing what's called supervised learning, which is where you tell the machine, hey, this is the color red. And you do this a million, a billion, a trillion times until the machine gets, this is the color red, and can pick it out. The most famous example of supervised learning is probably IBM Watson. Watson was, there was a woman in Tokyo who was had contracted a form of leukemia, and she just was not responding to treatments. She kept getting sicker and sicker. The doctors couldn't figure out why. So IBM and the University of Tokyo took her entire genome plus 233,000 oncology journals and said, find the match. Find out why this isn't working. Watson sequenced the genome. It read all 233,000 journals and said, you're treating the wrong kind of cancer. You're treating the wrong kind of leukemia. They changed the treatment. She made a full recovery. What's interesting about this is not just that Watson did it, accuracy, but it did it in 11 minutes. So that's supervised learning. You know, you'll see this much more in things like lead scoring in B2B analytics. Is this a good lead? Unsupervised learning means instead of knowing what we want to figure out all the ways that we could explore something. So you have you can explore these blocks by colors, you do by shapes, by sizes, and things like that. We want to know what's in the bag. As B2B marketers, think about how much data you have that is not in the side of a nice, tidy table. You have customer service. Center logs, you have CRM data, you have your inbox, which is probably the least structured thing in our entire lives. We have photos, we have video, we have music and audio. How do we make sense of it all? We use what's called unsupervised learning to categorize stuff. Here's an example I did, taking 2,600 articles and turning it into a chart so that I don't have to read all 2,600 articles. I can just have the machine summarize it and get a sense of what people were saying about this customer. Machine learning, math and stats, not magic. Which also means that once you start to learn all the different names and the labels and the techniques and how they work, you will be in a better position to evaluate things like vendors. When you're talking to a vendor in the learning lounge, is what it's called this year, the expo hall. The third branch of machine learning, which is still relatively new and not super practical yet, for B2B marketers is deep learning. This is when you tie lots and lots of machine learning together in like layers of pancakes and you get what's called deep learning. And this is where the future is going because we get machines that can do things better than we can. Machines using deep learning can read lips better than humans now. They can understand, they can see. How many of you use Google Translate? Okay, how many of you have been using for at least 2 years? Okay. Did you notice, you may have noticed, it's been a while now, but about 2 years ago, Google Translate got substantially better, like overnight. What Google did was they took away the old algorithm and said, okay, we're gonna have this deep learning software try to understand human language. So they took 103 languages, all of them, and stuffed them into this system called DeepMind. And it figured out that underneath our individual language is a meta language, is a proto language that the machine could translate. So when you translate in Google Translate, you go from English to Google to Chinese, or from Swedish to Google to Danish, which also means that if you were to put in sentence fragments in different languages, it would still spit out the proper language at the end. That's how the power of deep learning to be able to make sense of things. We see this most as B2B marketers in SEO. Guess what? Nobody in the world, including Google, has any idea how Google search algorithm works, right? Anyone who says they do doesn't understand machine learning because that algorithm has gotten so complex and so big and so deep over the years that we don't know what's inside. We only know how to tell it's doing the right or the wrong thing. That's the layout of machine learning and AI, of stats, algorithms, machine learning, and deep learning. And like I said, the reason for this is so that you start to develop a BS detector. When a vendor just starts spouting off terms, you can start to ask them, well, tell me more about how this works. We want to help you make a little bit smarter about these things. To give you a sense in terms of analytics, when are you going to likely start running into machine learning? We go back to our hierarchy. In the first two stages of the ladder of analytics, you're still doing just good old-fashioned stats and math, quantitative data. Right? You're not going to be doing machine learning at the, hey, what happened last week? Where you start to see this is in things like predictive analytics, where you have statistical analysis to figure out what's likely to happen, and then you start getting into the machine learning and deep learning. If your organization is down here at where's our data, we can't find it, you don't have to be terribly concerned about trying to launch a machine learning initiative that transforms the whole company today. You first need to find your data, because nothing will work without that. Now, what is AI good at and what is it bad at? In 2010, at the time, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was somewhat mocked for saying at his conference call that there were known knowns and unknown unknowns, but this is a really good way of categorizing tasks that machines could do. When you have known knowns, which is we know the problem and we know we have the data to solve it and we know that there's a process to it, that's what AI is really good at. It's really good at acceleration, accuracy, and automation. When we don't know what we know, meaning that we don't know what the problem is clearly, or we don't know where our data is. Like, for example, I was talking to a company earlier this year. Their sales department refused to give any data to their marketing department. Same company, but for some reason, I don't know, people are weird. That's an unknown unknown. On the other hand, there are things like known unknowns. We know what the problem is, but we don't know where the data is, or we don't know how to get it. We don't know even know what data we need. That's a data science problem. That's not a machine learning problem. And then there's the unknown unknowns, which is, who knows what's going on? But believe it or not, that's a good thing, because that's where we still have jobs, because we need to have to be able to do things like create and talk to other human beings, which is my least favorite thing to do. Machines are bad at stuff like empathy, right? You can simulate it, but they can't actually be empathetic. They're bad at judgment, big complex judgments. Should we fire this client? Is this a great corporate strategy overall? Machines can't do that because there's too many variables. It's too complex a question. Machines are bad at general life experience. They can't cross domains very well. And mostly, machines are not good at relationships. The exception is if your customer experience is so terrible that a machine is better. Like, say, the Department of Motor Vehicles. I think we'd all agree we'd just love to never talk to another human again. So let's look at some practical, tactical applications of how you could use AI today, or how it's being used today in the field of analytics. We use it to answer three questions: who, what, and when. And if you have these questions, these are applications that you would want to use artificial intelligence for. For example, in who, all of you are at this wonderful event, the Marketing Profs B2B Forum. When we look at every conversation people are having, if you wanted to find B2B marketing influencers, there's a number of different software tools that can do that. But when you use a certain type of machine learning, it's called network graphing technology, you can isolate and determine, hey, here's who's being talked about the most. Now, if you wanted to, say, talk to one of these folks to get them to represent your product or service for influencer marketing, you might want to look at the people who are talked about the most, like Ann Handley, because should they just mention your product, everyone looks to them for the answer, right? This is in stark contrast to how most influencer marketing is done, which is who is the loudest or who has the largest number of followers. You know, focus on who is talked about the most, because that's who everyone else looks up to. And the output of this is not just a cool chart, but actual data that you can go and use and hand off to a team of people or an agency to work with. So that's just one example of how you could be using machine learning to answer who questions. Also applies to things like lead scoring. Who is a good lead? Every variable that you collect right now could be used to put together a formula saying these are the things that indicate someone might be a good lead. And it's probably more than just do they have the budget, authority, need, and time frame. There are a whole bunch of other pieces of data you can gather, and you probably are already gathering them, that you can use. The second thing we can answer with machine learning are what questions. What happened? How many of you currently feel like you have an amazing solution and for attribution and analysis, so you know exactly what the most valuable things you do are? Wow, okay. So attribution analysis, at least from a digital perspective, is something that you can solve with machine learning. There's a technique, there's many techniques, but one of them is called Markov chain modeling, which is just a fancy way of playing Jenga with your conversions. Every step somebody takes from beginning to end, whether it's attend a webinar, read an email, click on a tweet, are things that your system and software are tracking. As people convert, as you gather data, you can then start to run simulations of conversions, pull away a step, and see if that conversion falls apart. This is an example using that same attribution model to figure out what are the most important channels. In this case, for this company, was email was the most important channel, even though in the regular analytics tool, they thought it was organic search. What actually causes conversions the most, the thing that if you took away, their marketing would collapse, is email. Then referrals in their comments on their blog, then organic search. A funny thing happened, actually. This company was all in on Facebook. Like, yeah, we're going to do Facebook marketing to grow our community of B2B marketers. What they found was when they looked in their analytics, it was actually Twitter that pushed people over the line much more often than Facebook. So they were able to realize maybe they needed to change their tactics. Another fun example of using machine learning today is reverse engineering Google. We don't know what's in Google's algorithm, but we can know what the algorithm spits out. So when you type in a thing like, say, industrial concrete, right, or medical devices, and you get a certain number of results, if you were to take the content of all of those pages that Google ranks highly for all your terms and stuff them into a text processor, you could pull out and say, hey, these are the terms that all these pages have in common. Right? So we don't know what's in Google's algorithm, but if you know the output, you can reverse engineer the output and say, okay, so for our industrial concrete site, we know we need to talk about lime, we need to talk about cement mixtures, we know we absolutely must talk about curing time, etc. And that will help improve your SEO because it creates more authority on your site. Again, using machine learning to reverse engineer Google. Another fun example is determining the strength of your brand. Suppose that you took your brand. I took marketing profs. I took 240,000 posts about marketing profs in the last year and said, what terms are most closely associated when people say marketing profs? This is a technique called vectorization, and no surprise, marketer, marketing, markets, right? But infographics. Mari Smith, Mark Schaefer, Mark Traphagen, some influencers found their way in there. Digital campaigns. If you wanted to figure out what was your brand most associated with, you would want to use machine learning to distill that out of all of the conversation that's happening about it. If you want to do this for a competitor and figure out then, okay, where are we strong and where are our competitors strong, you'd use machine learning to do this. The third and final example of where machine learning is useful for your analytics is in answering the question of when. When is something going to happen? Predictive analytics. We did a fun thing looking at just cheeses, the names of different cheeses. These are 40 different cheeses. And we can forecast from search data up to a year in advance when each week is the most, what's going to be the most popular cheese, like mozzarella. Right now it's cheddar this week, followed by string cheese, and then Havarti is the third cheese this week. But 2 months ago, it was halloumi because you can grill halloumi. Now imagine using this type of predictive analytics for your industry. So if you are, for example, in medical devices, knowing what different search terms people are searching for and being able to forecast when interest by the audience will be highest over the next 52 weeks would change your campaign timing, change your budgeting, change your content, all these things. For most of you in the room who are sitting in the front forward seats, there's a card on your seat that tells you when people are going to be checking their email. Because we did a look at all the different ways people type in things like Outlook out of office. Because you don't Google for that term except when. When you're about to go on vacation, you can't figure out how to turn the thing on so you can leave the office and go on vacation. Now, if you figure out when people search for that the least, they're in the office. They're reading their email. And so on that card, and for those of you who don't have a card, this would be a time to take a picture of the slides with your phone. These are the weeks to send email, and these are the weeks to not send email. It's on the card. Keep that card at your desk over the next year and time your campaigns. We did a fun thing. We figured out the worst week to send email this past year, and it was actually, no surprise, the week of July 4th, right? No one's checking their email. So we sent out what we call the worst converting email of the year. For the five people who were in the office, they actually got a chuckle and wrote back to us. But you can use machine learning to predict and forecast not just search, but anything in your analytics. You can plug this into Google Analytics and forecast every channel, search, social, referral traffic, pay-per-click advertising. All that stuff is stuff that you can forecast. The most important thing to do is to start now on your machine learning journey. You need to get started now because machine learning is fed by data. The sooner you're collecting clean data, the more of a training library you have. So how do you get started? The journey is a 7-step process. Again, you begin with that data foundation. You've got to get your data in order. You've got to have good governance. You've got to have good compliance policies, process to make sure your data is functional. Then you have analytics. You become data-driven. You start making decisions. You set KPIs that have meaning. You build qualitative research capabilities. You use things like focus groups and consumer surveys or business surveys or customer advisory boards to answer the question of why something happened. Next, you start automating processes because the faster you can automate processes in your B2B marketing, the more time and budget you'll have to do the next few steps, which is start building your data science capabilities. Before you can do AI, you have to be able to do data science, to explore the unknowns, to have the ability to write code and to analyze data and look at the data you're working with for the conclusions it gives you. Once you've done that, you advance to machine learning, where you're doing, having machines help you with the process automation, and doing those supervised, unsupervised, and deep learning. And eventually you become an AI-powered enterprise, where you are AI first. There are only a handful of companies right now that are AI first, and they're mostly like Google, IBM, Facebook, etc. How do you get started? If you have money but you don't have time, hire people or outsource the capability. If you don't have money but you do have time, look at the services and software offered by companies like Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and IBM. They all have relatively affordable machine learning solutions that you can fit into your business. If you really don't have money at all, but you have a lot of time, learn to do this stuff yourself. Every example I've shown you in this presentation of using machine learning has been done on this trusty, reliable computer here. No big cloud, no giant $250,000 projects, just me and these two programming languages. It will take you 6 to 12 months to learn the programming language and probably another 6 to 12 months to learn the machine learning, but start now. If you want to start and your company's not ready, you acknowledge your company's not ready, that's okay. You can still personally learn, and the thing that I recommend you do is pick one thing to measure and analyze the crap out of it. It doesn't even have to be your company. It just has to be something that you can measure. For example, I downloaded 1.4 million Medium posts to figure out what gets the most number of claps, which is their version of likes. It turns out that on Medium, using machine learning to analyze all the possible ways that, to look at a post, it's just length. You could be verbose and say garbage, but as long as it's a really long post, people like it. That's Medium for you. How do you prepare your company for artificial intelligence? You're going to need three types of people. Those three people, well, I like the expression data is the new oil, because if you've ever actually worked with crude oil, it's disgusting, right? It's like black tar. It doesn't do anything. But in order to make use of it, you have to extract it, you have to refine it, you have to bring it to marketing. Your data is exactly the same way. You need developers, people who have the ability to connect all these different systems and pull data out of those systems and put it somewhere. But then you need a second type of person, someone who can take that data, structure it, architect it, refine it, process it, and get it ready for business use. And then you need marketing technologists. Many of you in this room are to take those insights and deploy them and make business impact. So it's developers, data scientists, and marketing technologists. That's who you're going to need. So you're probably wondering at this point, am I going to have a job? The answer is maybe. Here's how to tip that to a yes. Number one, focus your own growth as a marketer on having multidisciplinary skills. When you look at the top 10 most in-demand skills by measured by LinkedIn, cloud, blah, 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 right? Any one of these professions has a substantial amount of things that can be automated, right? If you've done SEO, you know that a heck of a lot of SEO is boring, repetitive work. It will eventually be done by a machine. But if you are good at stats and UI and SEO, it's a lot harder to replace you because you have capabilities across different disciplines. So look into your professional development training. What can you be doing that will give you an edge because you can do more than one thing? You're not just a specialist in one area, you're a specialist in maybe two or three areas. Learn to think algorithmically, learn to think like a machine so that you can help design the machines and what they do. And this doesn't mean you have to go and learn how to code, you just have to be able to think. When I'm facing a problem, maybe don't just solve the problem, but think about how do I design a system to solve this problem over and over again without me. The third thing to prepare your career for will be to learn how to oversee the output of machines. This is a critical skill that will be in exceptional demand for the next 5 years, if not longer. What do I mean? Machines are only as good as what we put into them. Garbage in, garbage out. But a lot of people still have this belief that AI is magic and therefore is always right. It's completely wrong. Bias is one of the greatest dangers we face as marketers and actually as a society. In 2016, ProPublica did an article on how a police department attempted to predict whether or not a criminal would reoffend, someone would reoffend. Their algorithm was 20% right. You would have done a better flipping a coin. But their algorithm predicted that African Americans would reoffend 5 times more than they actually did. Someone put their thumb on the scale and said, I want the machine to say this. and assume that because it was everyone thought it was magic, that was always right. It's not. Earlier this year, Amazon got into a heck of a lot of trouble. They had to scrap their AI-based hiring system because it discriminated against women. Why? Because their existing training data set all was mostly male. And so the machine learned the bias and spit out the bias. So being able to oversee the machines is going to become a critical skill. Be outcome focused. Like I said, you don't need to learn how to code. That's generally something that only really weird people like me do. For example, I used to have this lovely chart in my office of all the different deep learning techniques I had to learn, right, and write code, and I got to about here in about a year and a half. And then I went to an IBM event earlier this year where IBM said, oh, we made that drag and drop. Oh, okay. So now, instead of you having to learn how to code, you just need to know what the Lego blocks do and drag them and drop them into the right order to get the outcome you want. So be outcome focused. Let the machines do the heavy lifting, and you'll be able to get up to speed with machine learning very, very quickly. In the future, there will be two kinds of jobs, right? Either you will manage the machines, or the machines will manage you, and that's it. So decide today which you want to be. And with that, take questions. I think there's a, do you want to run the microphone? Do we want to do that or just have people yell really loud? Here comes the microphone. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you mentioned about the marketing technologies, insights, developing insights.
Yes. Insights are.
How do you get that?
Well, insights are very closely tied to strategy and goals, right? If you don't know what your goals are, then you can't figure out what's helping you lead to those goals or lead you away from those goals. So, a big part of insight development is knowing where it is that you're supposed to be going, and then being able to judge whether any one thing is helping you move closer to or further away from that. That's a skill that applies regardless of whether you're talking about data or not. I mean, if you're talking about even something like hiring, are you hiring the right people or wrong people? Well, if you don't care who you hire, then it doesn't matter. But if you care very much about having things like diversity, then you can start to look for trends in your data that say, yes, we are heading towards or away from that goal. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Chris.
Sir.
My question is for marketing. Have you narrowed down a set of what are the right questions to ask that AI is capable of answering today?
Yes. A lot of those questions are like who, what, and when are questions that AI is well suited to answering if your data is good. If your data is good. If your data is bad, AI can't do squat because it will always spit out bad results. More specifically, time series forecasting, which is prediction, is something that AI is really good at. Another thing it's really good at is what's called driver analysis. When you have an outcome of some kind and you have a whole bunch of data, imagine, for example, you had a big spreadsheet and in the first column of that spreadsheet was sales, right? The number of sales you made. And then every subsequent column was things like marketing qualified leads, sales qualified leads, appointments, dials, and then you're going to email marketing, email sent, and then you're looking at web visitors, and then you're looking at social media tweets and likes on Tuesdays and number of emoji, right? You imagine this gigantic spreadsheet. Machine learning and AI is ideally suited to saying, if you want this outcome, which combination of variables, what interactions are likely to lead to that outcome that you can then develop a testing plan around and figure out, yep, that's probable. Now go find out if it's causative. One of the more interesting and complex forms of that type of insight derivation now is called multi-objective optimization. Because one of the most dangerous things you can do as a marketer is to optimize for only one thing. We only want more sales, which will logically lead to things like, you know, hating your customers and delivering no customer experience because that doesn't help sales. So being able to say we want sales and we want great customer reviews, and we want no complaints, and we want a good reputation. Machine learning is starting to develop capabilities to balance and trade off for good outcomes across the board, instead of one great outcome and everything else goes to hell. Mm-hmm. Next question. Who's got the microphone? Sir, right here. Well, so you need to do a whole bunch of data governance up front. And so good data, there's like 6 or 7 different ways to qualify data, right? It has to be clean. So unclean data, data that's broken 8 ways to Sunday. Real simple example of that would be like, you know, you have test at testing.com in your CRM, right? You know that's not good data. It has to be complete. So if your Google Analytics pixel stopped working for 3 days on your website and a whole bunch of zeros, like, okay, we don't have complete data. Right, your data has to be compatible. It has to work in and out of the systems that you work with. Your data has to be chosen well, meaning that you're choosing on you've done that big analysis to figure out what to actually track. Your data has to be comprehensive to be able to answer the questions that you want to cover. And that's where you're asking is, do we know enough to be able to answer the question in a comprehensive way? There's an exercise, we actually did it at the Tuesday workshop called outcome mapping, where you draw out a path from your goal and to every piece of data that links to that goal. And so it will take a long time to do the full exercise, but that's one of those things that's a really good idea to do so that you can say, yes, I have this data, or nope, I'm missing that data. It gets really interesting when you do that with like the head of sales and the head of customer experience and the head of finance, because you start going, they all care about like these 44 additional variables, and then that chart gets real big. But that's how you know, yep, we're taking into account everything we should be. The other thing is knowing what your outcome, you're generally looking for, so it passes a sniff test, right? If you say you have a goal of hiring 50% women and you've hired 4% women, something's clearly wrong. So knowing like this is outside of the bounds of reasonableness or what we'd expect is part and parcel of that data question.
Like you said, most of us would not be inclined to go look play with Python or R, like a little technical.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're like a lot of marketers in this room who are really interested and we wanted to start researching something, where would you recommend resources or events or publications?
If you wanted to try a little bit hands-on, I would recommend that you sign up for a free account for IBM Watson Studio to do the drag and drop stuff, because you're not going to break it. You literally can't break anything. And you can put in data sets and just start to get some experience. There are a whole series of courses from statistics through machine learning, through deep learning that I'd recommend. On that card is an email address. If you shoot me an email, I can send you to a blog post that has a list of all the courses and books that we recommend that you use to start skilling up. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Comments, dad jokes. All right, thank you very much, everyone.
Now we know.
Want help solving your company's data analytics and digital marketing problems? Visit trustinsights.ai today and let us know how we can help you.